What helped us is that we had a competitor copy us, and they were a really big company. They copied what we were doing, and they went into Whole Foods, like right away, with this savory tea idea. And it failed miserably because theirs tasted like boiled vegetable water. When we got the notice that we won, and we had to share a booth with them at the show, someone came up to them and said, oh, don't you guys have something like Millie's is doing? And they go, yeah, we're not doing that anymore, but Millie's product is really amazing. It's a really big tea company, and they're telling you know, go buy your stuff from Millie's. It's been a very long process. I mean, we've been doing this for now almost 14 years, and, you know, we started off with Kickstarter. It's kept growing and growing and growing, and now we're in 3,000 retail locations. We're the number one best-selling vegetable broth on Amazon. We're, you know, a 14-year overnight success.
All right, welcome back to the Duck Pond Podcast, where we see how brands got their wings. Today we have Lance Kesner, co-creator of Millie's Sipping Broth, the savory teabag-styled broth that started by bringing a bouillon cube to school. And now years later, it won Hot Beverage of the Year at the Fancy Food Show, and it's scoring shelves at Walmart and Sam's Club. Lance, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
No, it's great to have you on. And I really wanted to dive in, starting with the beginning. I understand that you began this business with your wife, Lori. How did you two come up with Millie's Sipping Broth, and what's the story behind that?
Yeah, so Lori was a teacher, and she taught kindergarten kids. And if you can imagine being in a room filled with 24 rambunctious kids, you know, for hours on end, everyone needed a break when the bell rang. And so Lori, she would go into the teacher's room, and typically the only options for her were, you know, leftover cakes and cookies from the weekend that people would leave there. And so she wanted something that would kind of replace a snack that tasted like a snack. And so she used to take a bouillon cube with her to school. And that bouillon cube was, you know, I said to her, you know, that's filled with really bad stuff, a lot of sodium. Let me make something that's a little healthier for you. And so I put together dehydrated vegetables, herbs, and seasoning, and put them into a cup. And she said, it tastes great, but it's all over the place. Can't we just put it into a tea bag? And so I said, yeah, but you got to help me. So we took Lipton tea bags, ripped them apart, and put the concoction into the tea bags. And she took them to work and put them in the break room, and everyone went crazy over them. And that's how we started.
I love that. Very humble beginnings. And you two would rip open the Lipton tea bags and essentially restaple them. How many iterations did it take before settling on something that's close to what you guys have now?
Well, yeah. So that, you know, that part was, we thought we had an easy idea that, you know, we could just take off and do. And yeah, we did start in our kitchen. We did start in our kitchen to begin with. What we realized is that the process of making tea is, you know, it's centuries old, and putting it into a tea bag is, you know, for, you know, the machinery and everything like that is very dedicated to a certain process, to the tea leaves and all that kind of stuff. What we were doing, we were breaking the whole model, and it took almost 5 years to get to a point where we were confident in it being able to scale. And the process for us really was get the basic idea into a package, get it in front of a customer to see if they'll buy it, try and figure out the packaging, the branding, the price, what we were going to call it, the flavor, try and figure those things out as quickly as we possibly could, make mistakes, fix the mistakes, and then do that. So we literally pushed ourselves to get in front of live customers as quickly as possible. We're here in Seattle, or outside of Seattle, Bellevue, Washington. We set up a booth at the Pike Place Market, right across the street from the original Starbucks. And that forced us to get our pitch down because we were literally seeing thousands of people walk in front of us. And so we were trying to make sure that we could catch their attention. It made sense to them. Have them taste it, right? Get the experience going as quickly as possible. And take that feed, take whatever feedback they would give us and fix or reiterate on the product as quickly as we possibly could.
I love that. You know, I'm actually located on the West Coast as well, and I really love the Pike Marketplace. What was some of the most common reactions that you would get from the customer?
At the beginning, we called, so our product's Millie's Sipping Broth right now. At the beginning, we called it Millie's Savory Teas. And we thought that, hey, we've got this new idea. It's a savory tea because it's in a tea bag. Well, the probably 8 out of 10 people would go, ooh, yuck. This doesn't taste like tea. And, you know, to us, we're like, well, what do you mean? You know, it's a savory tea. And they're like, no, this is terrible. When we stopped saying savory tea, we would just say broth. They'd go, oh, this is great. This tastes great. It took us a while to deliver that. And what helped us, and it's really funny because, you know, some people would look at this and say, oh, that's terrible. But what helped us is that we had a competitor copy us, and they were a really big company. They copied what we were doing. They copied our flavors. They copied the text from our website and everything like that. About 6 months after we started, and they went into Whole Foods like right away with this savory tea idea. And it failed miserably because of that reason, that people couldn't wrap their head around that idea. And also they left out an ingredient that we had in our product. So there's basically, you know, the difference between what we were doing and what they were doing. Ours tasted like this rich, wonderful, flavorful broth. Theirs tasted like boiled vegetable water. And so we had to change, we had to rebrand. We had to take savory tea out of our vernacular, changed it to sipping broth. And it was probably one of the best things that we did.
I find it so interesting how one word can really change the perception. You know,
the same idea. I mean, it's the same product, but in people's mind, you know, that was also something we learned is we had to create an image or a feeling in people's minds. And it's still ongoing. I mean, if you look at our packaging right now, we're actually getting ready to change everything. And this is from, you know, almost from our original idea. And, you know, our focus has really been on the quality of the product, the quality of the experience. Because when we first came out, we were selling direct to consumers. We weren't on retail shelves. And those are completely different disciplines. But yeah, it you know, just a word, one word really makes a huge difference.
Definitely. And, you know, it's such a very clever and suitable form factor. You know, before researching you guys for this episode, I never really considered broth in a teabag form factor, but it makes perfect sense when you really think about it.
Well, I always say to people, we've been drinking broth for thousands of years. You know, people use it to make themselves feel better. People serve it, you know, to their family and loved ones to you know, comfort them. We just made it more convenient by putting it in a better, you know, a better form.
Definitely. And broth in a teabag is pretty new for most people. How do you teach people to think of, you know, savory drinks as snacks and or broth as comfort beverages rather than just soup?
Yeah, that also has been, you know, one of the biggest challenges. Even though we've been drinking broth, you know, people are familiar with broth and drinking broth and everything like that. You know, that probably has been the biggest challenge for us. The only way that we have been able to get people to kind of you know, play along with us is to get it, have them have an experience of tasting it, which is a challenge. This is a big challenge. So, you know, the focus has been finding the right customer base who doesn't, you know, want us or isn't just curious about us, but the right customer base who absolutely needs our product, and figuring out who that is and what the motivation is, and feeding that motivation, and solving, you know, whatever issue they're having with our product. And those people become the mouthpieces for everyone else to try and experience our product.
I find that so interesting. So the broth is very calming. You know, I love my broths. Was that the major deciding factor into creating this business?
To ask the question again, in what way? What do you mean?
Essentially, what was the deciding factor for you guys to, you know, create this business and to get into the CPG space?
I see. Yeah. So we had my wife and I had started our business earlier. We actually created a food product. It was a garlic product that we started a long time ago. And it was a kind of a side business. It's a hobby business, really. You know, we had other jobs and everything like that. But we learned a lot from that. And, you know, part of the lessons that we learned were you had to have something that solved a problem. You had to have something that was scalable in a really meaningful way. And you had to have a product that people would use over and over and over again. So those things were kind of, you know, at the top of our mind. And when Lori, because we were working separate jobs, when Lori was working and then she encountered this issue, it hit all of the requirements that we saw as being successful for a, you know, a much bigger, broader category. And those are the things that kind of convinced us. Also, the fact that people really, they started integrating it into their daily routines. That's the ultimate, you know, because if you create a product that people are going to use maybe once or twice a year, not worth it. Even if it's exciting to you, that's great. But the problem is your market is so limited that it's not, you know, you're not going to get a network effect out of that. If you have something that people, you know, coffee, right? People drink it every day. There's a lot of competition, but people drink it every day. So with our product, we literally just got off the phone with a customer who drinks our product once or twice a day and, you know, buys it online because she's in South Carolina. That's the only place she can get it from. But though that's who we're feeding, you know, that's the answer. Did we know that off the bat? No, we speculated that that's what we wanted to do, but we had no idea how to get to that point. But again, finding the people who need it are the ones that, you know, we really, you know, we continue to focus on, because, you know, that's how we are going to build our base, really.
And I find that so interesting. And how do you go about finding those people?
Yeah, I think, you know, listening to, you know, bringing it to people, first off, listening to their responses, listening to the way they think about it and talk about it, putting your ego aside, which is not easy, because you always have this idea of, oh, it's going to be for this, it's going to be for that, whatever. But when they tell you something different, you kind of have to sit back and go, why are they telling me this? And so that was critical for us, is listening to what they were telling us, putting that back into kind of our plan of you know, getting the product out there, and then finding more of those people somehow, right? You always say, oh, social media is the answer. It's not always the answer. The ultimate social media is word of mouth, person to person. And so that's, you know, it's been a very long process. I mean, we've been doing this for now almost 14 years. And, you know, we started off with Kickstarter. You know, that was the first thing. And so little groups of people, it's kept growing and growing and growing. And now we're in 3,000 retail locations. We're the number one best-selling vegetable broth on Amazon. We're, you know, a 14-year overnight success. We have competitors. But it's, and we still are focused on those people who need us and making sure that we are servicing those people. And then all the other people that are around that, if they get benefit from us too, that's amazing. So, you know, yeah.
I love that. So there's a couple points I do want to touch on there and continue the thread. You know, it sounds like you guys really carved out your own space. You know, it sounds like, you know, the sipping broth and the tea form factor hasn't really been done before. And creating that space allows you to attract other people. And which is why, you know, it's led you to becoming number one on Amazon, which is an amazing achievement. So I do want to go and continue that conversation, but I do want to touch upon the brand itself. So the name is Millie. It's after Lori's mom, and it's tied to, you know, comforting recipes. How much did family, memory, and heritage play into every flavor you develop?
That was really it still is a leading principle for us. What we learned early on in our business is that the more of our personality that we can put into our products, the more we can connect with people. That's just the kind of people we are. We're not creating these things to just make money. You know, this has to be something that we would get up every day and be super proud of because it is part of us. I pointed out, you know, the artwork on the packaging Lori drew personally, you know, the cards that we send with each order have a handwritten note from Lori and myself. So that part was critical, and we knew that the family members who were no longer with us in our lives, who influenced and, you know, helped us become who we are, we wanted to be able to provide, you know, the ultimate tribute to them by naming our products after them. And, you know, and it really makes it special for us to share, because we can share their stories. We can share, what it means to have, you know, a Millie experience. You know, she used to get people together around food on the weekends, and the family would come together and share, you know, their successes and, you know, failures for the week, and we'd all talk. And, you know, her biggest, and Millie was great because she was my mother-in-law. She was the ultimate mother-in-law because she never got involved in people's decisions. All she wanted to do is be there to help you. And the best way she knew to do that is to make like all this great food that, you know, tasted great. And I always joked with her because one time she made something that she thought she put too much cheese in. And I said, Millie, you can never make a cheese mistake. Please, you know, when in doubt, add more cheese. So, you know, those things, you know, they stay with you for the rest of your life. And us being able to hand that down to our kids to be proud of is, I mean, it's like, you know, nobody can take that away from us.
I really love how Millie's spirit and love, you know, is really shown through this brand. And it really sounds like you guys wouldn't compromise on your guys' core values. How do you guys maintain the core values as you guys increase in scale and, you know, spread nationwide?
Yeah, that's a, you know, I was originally worried about that. And I think that, you know, as we continue to grow and, you know, the only things we can control. So that's the thing. We're focusing on things that we can control. And the most critical thing to us is the experience with the product. And so Lori and I, we just came back from a trade show in Nashville where we were presenting our product to about 7,000 dietitians. Wow. And these are, you know, people who are responsible for helping people with their food choices. You know, some people may have illnesses, or they're maybe trying to achieve weight loss or something like that. And the experience that they had with our product, tasting the product, we would give them samples and they would go back to their hotel room and taste it. And then they'd come back the next day and tell us, you know, I tasted what you gave me. It was amazing. That kind of stuff. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's the number one thing that we always focus on. The number two thing is connecting with the brand in a scalable way. And so what we've done is we've created our mascot, who is the broth sloth. And the, you know, at the trade show, we have a picture. We have a full scale sloth. It's actually bigger than a human that people take pictures with, and these big arms come around and hug them. And that experience, it's a super simple idea of getting people to have an experience. Those are the two things that we're focused on, and we're just kind of let everything else kind of go to the side. And that seems to be working for us. We've been able to, we're just releasing, in fact, do I have one here? I don't have one here, but we're just releasing a broth sloth box, and it's a picture of the broth sloth on the boxes that we ship our orders out in, and you can make it into a carrying, we ship it with handles. So you can use it to carry groceries or whatever after we ship it to you. So those are the things, you know, experiences on scale with the brand that are helpful, that are reflective of our personality. The broth sloth wants you to sip slow and stay cozy. You know, those are the ideas behind it. And I think just keeping things as genuine. I hate using the word authentic because everything's authentic. You know, we're not, you know, robots. But keeping things as genuine to our ideals as possible is makes us unique. Even though we've created a new category, we've created this idea that is new and nobody had done before. It doesn't mean you have to stop. You have to keep on your path of authenticity and genuineness, because, you know, it doesn't help to copy what other people are doing necessarily, and that's not what we're doing.
I love that. It really sounds like being true to your core values and really solidifying them, and everything else just takes care of itself at scale.
Yeah. And you know what? You have to really believe in what you're doing, because some people, I think they get scared and, you know, we have been in the past. I mean, there have been times where I look at some decisions and regret, oh, we made that decision because we were scared of something or whatever. But yeah, you really have to let go of that fear and focus on what makes the experience the most valuable as possible. You know, some people say, oh, you're, you know, the packaging looks old and this kind of stuff. And we're like, okay, great. How did you like the product? The product was amazing. Thank, that's great. Focus, you know, let's get that going. And then we'll start taking care of all the rough edges eventually. But that experience with the product, if you like that and it tasted good to you, that's, then it's success to us.
I love that the experience really comes first.
Yeah.
Earlier, you mentioned being at a show in Nashville, correct?
Uh-huh.
Tell me more about that. And also, during my research, I found out that you guys won the Hot Beverage of the Year at the Fancy Food Show in 2017.
Yeah.
What was that like? And how did it shift your strategy?
Yeah. So the Fancy Food Show is run by the Specialty Food Association. And every year they have an award that they give for various categories of products. And so we had gotten to a point where we felt like we were confident in our ability to deliver our product at a bigger scale, but to the specialty market. So a specialty market might be, let's say, a high-end gourmet store or a tea shop or some place where you would go where there would be food items there. It wasn't a grocery store, but it was more like a gift shop, right? Where you would see fancier or higher end items that are unique, high-end chocolates, those kinds of things. Those are the types of stores that, okay. So we entered that. The competition is stiff. I mean, there's, you know, we were up against coffees, teas, ciders, chai, all of these hot drinks, right? Every year, thousands of products come out. And so when we got the notice that we won, the competitor I told you about that copied us, they won runner up for another product, something different that wasn't even what, you know, and we had to share a booth with them at the show. And it was really funny because the person from that company, someone came up to them and said, oh, don't you guys have something like what Millie's is doing? And they go, yeah, we're not doing that anymore, but Millie's product is really amazing. And so, you know, that was like, it was incredible to hear that. And I'm like, what just happened? That was, you know, this is a multi-billion, not a multi-billion dollar company. This is a really big tea company. And they're telling, you know, go buy your stuff from Millie's. So that was pretty surreal, you know, and we were in New York and we got the award and it was pretty amazing. And your second question about being at the trade show, what was that question?
Yeah, essentially, how did you guys get into that?
Yes. You know, it was all about, you know, when we were doing the fairs and festivals, the Pike Place Market, direct consumer shows. As we started to kind of expand and get more confidence in our ability to deliver the product in the bigger and bigger scale, we would look for trade shows that were a little more focused on the market so that we thought would help us expand. And so those were specialty shops, coffee and tea shows, wholesale shows for specialty grocers, those kinds of things. And we learned from each one of those shows what worked, what didn't work. Did we write any, or did we get any business out of it? You know, we quickly realized that if we thought we were going to get some business out of a show and we didn't, that was it. That we weren't going to do that again. And but we would focus on the areas that did generate the, you know, money, because you have to pay to get into these. And so this show that we just did is kind of like, you don't write orders at this show. It's all about the influencers who are telling people about your product. And so what we found out is that our product is really desirable by people who are on wellness routines, who are trying to help themselves maybe maintain or lose weight, or people who are maybe going through cancer treatments or have, you know, some kind of eating issues. And the ultimate influencers in that market are dietitians. The dietitians are the people who tell people about new products. And so having them have a firsthand experience with our product was the reason why we chose to do a show like that.
I love that. Going back to, you know, winning at the Fancy Food Show, it's an incredible achievement. The icing on the cake is, you know, your bigger competitor essentially handing you the crown. And it's incredible.
Yeah.
Well, Lance, this has been a lovely conversation. Where can people find you?
Yeah, you can find us on our website, sippingbroth.com. There's a discount code you can get when you go there. And we're also on Amazon, and we are in, there's a store finder on our website too. We're in about 3,000 retail locations around the country. So if you don't find a store near you, order it off our website. We ship usually on the same day. And we're on social media at Sipping Broths, plural, and also on LinkedIn. So yeah, love for anyone to reach out and find out more about what we're doing.
That's incredible. Well, Lance, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much, Rain. It was really a pleasure.